cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-covid-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
21st edition of Gray Matters. Tonight, from the NCRA, we have two half-hour documentaries produced by the member stations of the National Campus Community Radio Association, both dealing with the Indian residential schools. The first one comes from CFUVFM. This We Blanket the People, the documentary produced by Janet Rogers and Sasha Willett. And the second is from CFRU in Guelph, Ontario, entitled Identity Theft. Well, here they are, this edition of Gray Matters.
Resignating reconciliation. With this, we blanket the people. Indigenous artists are inspired and also affected by the residential school experience, and are compelled to respond to this experience through their art. We catch up with Talta multidisciplinary artist and fine art teacher, Peter Morin, on the day he, along with community, completes the world's largest button blanket.
We did it.
We did something good today.
We're working with a community of people who have ancestry from all over the world. So one of the strategies for the creation of this blanket, or in thinking about the crest, the way to determine identity, the blanket has a way of determining an identity when you dance it. Because we were with such a diverse place, the blanket itself told me, I guess, that it needs to be a blanket for ancestors to dance in, all of our ancestors. And then this is where the salmon come into play, because the salmon, on the face of the blanket are rows of salmon. So this blanket, in essence, is kind of memorial or a way of honoring ancestors, ancestry. It's a way, when we think about the dance or the potential dance of it, it's a dance to honor the salmon people and their contributions to our world, our contemporary world. It's a blanket to honor the land that we're on right now, the Coast Salish land. The center panel piece is a moon, and the design on the moon was created by an artist, Barry Sam, from Tsleil-Waututh Nation. And it's also a way to invite people to think about their connection to the difficult political histories we live in this place named, called Canada. The blanket is also a vehicle for developing community.
Cowboy Smith is a Blackfoot filmmaker and actor. He explains his work as a media storyteller and the opportunity he has within his work to bring our stories to light.
Any pan-Indian solution to the problems that we all face? I'm going through my understanding as an artist expressing what I understand of the urban indigenous experience through the narrative format and conventions of a feature film. In the film, some of the themes we're dealing with is addiction, of course, dealing with displacement, dealing with homophobia, dealing with sexuality, and of course all of the connotations around shame culture that exist specifically with those particular subjects. So, you know, I'm still trying to understand everything. I'm still trying to understand the way the world works, the way I operate within the world. I'm far from, I call myself an advanced beginner in life. You know, I'm still pretty close to being a rookie still. But the best way for me to really truly understand it is to express somehow, some way. Hence, you know, documentary work I've done, music video work I've done, acting I've done. It's all just a process of really trying to understand and experience life, you know, really, really, truly experience life through artistic expression and collaboration.
Brian Sampson is a Coast Salish emerging hip-hop artist who recently created a music track and music video called Re-Educate that addresses the residential school experience from his territory of the Sartlip Reserve.
Well, I mean, I got a lot of response from everybody. Like, I mean, a lot of people that don't even listen to hip-hop music, you know, have had elders and people, you know, a decade or so older than me, you know, come up and shake my hand and tell me that it was really good and they appreciated what I did. And, you know, I mean, it opened opened a few more eyes, you know, to someone that may never know. I mean, the song is powerful, but it doesn't go into like full depth of the nastiness that happened back then, but you know, it's a slight glimpse into it. And like I put it online, I said it's a song that scratches the surface of the effects of residential school on our people.
Education, re-education, re-education.
Heart pounding as I ran for home late that night, with fear in my eyes, running away from the white. A voice from above said, avoid that misguiding light. So I run for darkness, now I feel so alone. I see the lights of a village and I'm almost home. Too late, we're stolen from homes, kidnapped from families. I'm looking for answers to why your God can't stand me. I'm only 8, mind frame is too small to comprehend the word hate. I'm so innocent, I swear this has to be a mistake. So I'm led to believe in your organized religion. So God wants you to molest little native children. Family separated, children molested and abused. And this is stuff that you'll never hear on the news. How they stole my ancestors' future from the reservation. And us kids sent to boarding school isolation. I'm so lonely, what message is the creator trying to send? I'm so cold, so lonely without a friend. Sit in this white man's world, do my best to blend. Children sent to a world of hurt, what a destination. Keyword for the government was assimilation. Canada's true history has yet to be told. So me and the kids wrote the song so the truth will unfold.
Much humiliation for so many nations. It's time to re-educate the new generation. The past was hard, but the future's for the kids. The way of my people is how I'm gonna live. So much humiliation for so many
but
nations.
But yeah, like it's gotten a lot of love from a lot of people. I mean, people have emailed me saying it was beautiful. They watched it with their moms, you know, elderly people, and they cried. We had to turn it off and then watch it again. And, you know, so, I mean, That's good that maybe it'll awaken something up, you know, because, you know, we don't have very many elders left, and this is stuff that I think also needs to be taught firsthand to our children to let them know the real truth before it's put in books by some white guy. Some people, alcohol and drugs may seem like the reason, but, you know, once you clear your head and realize, you know, it's not, it's... You know, there's not very many people that know our music because it's not really out there yet. We're just kind of more self-therapy for us. Who we get to share it with is be aware of what's going on with our people in our community, but also the side of us that goes out and, you know, has fun. And
you know, the whiskey traders were doing a lot of damage in the area. The smallpox epidemics were waves and waves of them throughout the decades leading up to that time. And, of course, the loss of the buffalo. So there were common problems on both sides There was issues with agriculture. There was issues, of course, with clashing with the Blackfoot. The Blackfoot didn't take a lot of people's crap. Never defeated by anybody in anyone in the Canadian colonial American army. Never once defeated. Maria's was a massacre. The Baker massacre. That's not considered a war. That was a massacre. So all you historians get that through your thick skulls. So we're just basically trying to parse out the spirit of it and really build a stronger relationship between the two sides, especially with the contentious issues of Idle Lemoore and the treaties, the pipelines, all of these things that are happening in the northern part of Alberta, which is not our traditional territory, but we still stand with Fort Chip and all of the surrounding areas and whatever they decide they want to do with their territory. So we want to leave better circumstances for the next generations, not having to leave a mess and a social mess, environmental mess. You know, we're artists doing what we can, telling stories, creating the shared experience of theater, which is a beautiful experience. I love theater. It's where I got my professional start. So it's a very exciting process because I get to work with my elders. I'm learning my language with these elders and my mentor, Narcisse Blood, who's also part of our crew. And it's going to be a really great experience. So it's an ongoing process, and it's exciting, and we just want to help educate people and go back to that spirit and intent, which was peace, which was to share and respect each other on both sides.
Okay. Oh, yes, yeah, that's true. And different ages, like I like that there was different ages too, and I know that there's something funny about ages and elders and stuff like that, but at one point we were all talking about drinking stories, and I just think, you know, when I was a kid, it was important to know these stories, what other people would, you know, it opened up an opportunity for that kind of transmission of knowledge to be, you know. But you know what I mean? Like, there's all these, you know, we also think about knowledge as, oh, it's always trickster or, you know. It's always trickster or something, you know, but it's not. It's not always trickster. It's how you live your life every day, you know. How did you struggle through that? How did you get through smoking or not smoking? Or how did you do that? And then, as well as traditional stories.
Artists today don't have to reach too far back into a collective history for first-hand accounts of residential school experience and survival which informs their work. Some artists are focusing their talents towards messages of resistance as a way to ensure attempted genocides such as the residential school experience never happen again.
So, you know, there's some teachers up at that school that, you know, that went through that, so I'm sure a lot of it was firsthand for them. So we did the first annual Native Hip Hop Festival in Vancouver over just at the end of the summer. Addie Elliott, she's the voice for the chorus, and she has an amazing voice. So my song that, like, Reeducate is strictly about residential schools. Like, what I did for that song was I put myself in an elder's shoe and told that story there. But as far as, you know, there was a group there called Savage Family, and they touched upon a lot of, like, I wouldn't say, like, I guess you could say political, but more from our point of view, and they have a very righteous, like, you know, we're not going to take this crap anymore kind of performance. And they did it without microphones, they did it without beats. And, yeah, like, there was, like, a couple of young kids in their group, too, that they were just amazing. You know, everybody was glued to every word they said there.
They try and kill us off, even our children, our targets. The Holocaust never ended, our people still be a problem. If you're Native, then you know if not, feel disregardless. These governments are some terrorists, guilty as charged. So listen up, there's a story of truth. What's a warrior to do? Set bang on these cowards with no more excuses.
with no more excuses. Bang on these cowards with no more excuses. I know the masses yearn to see us dead. They watched the massacres. A mother carried a child to safety. They went after her, killed and cut her breasts off. A warrior sings his death song. They pray for us the moment they die before they bless us. Hear the message in the memories of them and never forget their presence. Yes, remember the dead. Remember they live inside us, each and every one of me. Reaching for the sun, that's just me showing my love. No retreat and never run. Something brought me to light and said take the option to fight over just watching them die. So we constantly try to live life as sacred as that, until the day that we die, until the day that we back. Connect the prayers of the past, present, future, here and then, and the music in the wind. That's the proof our spirit lives. That's the proof that we exist here, live in the flesh, with a pride that exists inside us to fight to the death. They try and kill us off, even our children.
You know, and then Oz 12, you know, he touches on subjects and stuff with his music and stuff. I mean, everybody kind of dabs in it a little bit, like we have to, right? So, yeah, as far as that, you know, like, I haven't heard anything yet like what I've done. You know, I use the building that's up on the tribal school property. It's the first residential school on reserve in BC. I think it was 1916 it was built, and that little building's still there. Kind of like, you know, like I have like zero money for production. I use the best of my ability to, you know, I got a couple, like a nun and priest costume. I asked some local children from the nations around here to show up, and their parents brought them, which was really cool. You know, I had like a big vision of what I wanted to do and did the best I could, and I made it work. I know Matthias kind of grasps it. I mean, I know he does social studies, and he's getting up there in his age now. And Dominic asks questions he doesn't fully understand and grasp it, you know. But he knows, like him and my mom told him, like after all this was being worked on, and he was full of questions, right? So, you know, I don't think it weighs heavy on his heart yet. He's too young, right? So.
Yeah.
But he understands, but he just doesn't fully grasp it yet.
Carrie Newman, a young and yet renowned Kwakwaka'wakw carver, is constructing a blanket of his own called the Witness Blanket. CFUV's Indigenous News anchor Sasha Ouellette asks Carrie Newman to expand on the intention and construction of his project.
The Witness Blanket is an art piece meant to honor residential school survivors, and it's a piece that I've been making that's made up of items we've gathered from residential schools, government buildings, churches, and traditional structures across the country. The end result will be a 40 foot by 8 foot blanket that has the bases. The majority of it's made up from cedar, and then the rest of the pieces that we've collected are mounted to or applied somehow to the surface of that cedar. We've been to every province and territory, including like Nunavut, Lavik, so all through the north, all through the Maritimes. We've managed to make it to every part, every corner of the country. We were very careful in our approach to the project, understanding that it's a sensitive subject. Understanding that even the question, even asking somebody if they're willing to talk about it, can bring up a lot of bad feelings, a lot of scary stuff. We approached it very carefully. We tried to make sure that we did things not just in a respectful way, but in a way where we were making sure that we were that supports were available, just like at every stage of the process.
My son, where did you
look at these items with their age and you hear the story that directly relates to them, for me, it's once again a different perspective, because, for instance, I have a doorknob, a brass doorknob that was from a boy's residence, and when I see the doorknob and I found out where it was from, I start imagining all the hands that opened that doorknob every night, right? We have a doorway for the infirmary that's going to be one of the panels on the blanket, and I think about all the people who went through that door and what happened inside there. So it offers something that's from that time and place to illustrate, for lack of a better word, exactly what's going on in the story. That some children didn't get to stay with their parents, or, you know, what's appropriate to talk to a child about. And then other things where we get deeper into the abuses or that sort of thing, then that would be for, obviously, for later on in the process of the curriculum. But it's hopefully leaving a resource, a curriculum resource for future generations to learn about.
Artists have a unique and powerful voice of resistance in retrieving cultural elements meant to be extinguished by residential school. The Ganawagi Mohawk Language Immersion School keeps their culture alive while students write poetry in the Mohawk language.
De hoya dastara te dune, roya daskat stune, tori wayeri une, ruri wadoga one, rakshne naam sat de wogadu mzoni ne, jut gonses ye haja dahaskwe, zinume de wogadu mzoni ne, yamguenu. Sahonum wakta, wogade nyanda, amzahiun haseruni, amzahia dagarida tste. Sahraheye, Wagate nyanta amza hiun hete. Nekzi, yeti yodum mzinawe ahrun hege. Onokzi gat jok wahadohetste. Nihunarunkwa, nihia dizagum.
Yogodi wahne, nekti ona, yogoreza. Yogot nigun raksahne, nekti ona, yogotanuni. Gardiwis yago jat da dunun gardiwis ganasquaze wagezavu. Zoknaa de yunja da jat da tsardiu.
No.
Noanda gazat katum. Zuzi ezor radi aroke de got katum. Zinioskats. Johnirum nekzi yonhetska. Wagegum. Niwagades watum. Wagat gonze. Onegi ni de wagadasawe agunhege. Ne ezi wagade quagwa ne yoskats. Ganadro kue wagat rori. Ganadro kue waktara.
Indigenous language is poetry. It is beautiful. Artists protect this beautiful part of who we are every time they make art.
It is such a beautiful language. Do you know that we don't have one swearing word in Mohawk? No, nothing. No, it's all nice words. Yeah. But you can swear, but not the same way as the white people do, you know. But the most you can say "utkuzeraksa" means the devil.
Oh,
but that's about all. But other than that, it's a beautiful language. Mm. Yeah.
We raise our hands and give thanks to the artists, Peter Morin, Cowboy Smith, Brian Sampson, Carrie Newman, co-producer Sasha Roulette, and we acknowledge support from the National Campus and Community Radio Association, along with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, for their part in bringing these stories to you. My name is Janet Rogers, and it is an honor in bringing the voices of our artists to you in this documentary, Resignating Reconciliation, with this, we blanket the people.
And you're listening to CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial. This is Gray Matters with two half-hour documentaries on the Indian residential school crisis produced by the National Campus Community Radio Station members, CFRU and CFUV from Guelph and Victoria, respectively.
The audio documentary you're about to hear is called Identity Theft and was produced by Shonda White with assistance from Brooke Charno. It is an anonymous collection of stories and thoughts about Canadian residential schools and their impact on the present day. The contents of this documentary may be sensitive in nature and or be considered offensive by some listeners. However, it is in our best interest to have these voices heard and respected. If you or someone you know is experiencing distress, please call the Indian Residential Schools Crisis Line at 1-866-925-4419. The songs featured in this audio documentary are from the album My Northern Home, a collection of songs sung and recorded by students who attended and graduated from Poplar Hill Development School in Northern Ontario from 1969 to 1972. Of the 15 songs featured on the album, 13 were sung in English and 2 were sung in Cree. The songs range in topic from school life to Catholic teachings of Jesus Christ.
In 1938, the first residential school was opened, and that was through the government, which was not Canada at that time. It was British. We were called Upper and Lower Canada at that time. But the residential school system was introduced, and the way this system was supposed to work was the The Royal Proclamation was issued 250 years ago, this year. And the Royal Proclamation is a British proclamation, British law, that says that native land in general, cannot be taken or commodified without first consulting native people. And we, the British government, will act on behalf of those indigenous people's interests, native people's interests. So we found that in order for the native people to be understanding of the idea that land is going to be commodified, and that when we enter into a treaty with native people, we're actually asking them to surrender their land. And when they surrender their land, they have to understand what the term surrender means. So we have to educate them. And the way we do that, the way we've chosen, the way the British government has chosen to do that, is to create cultural safety zones, which are called reservations, reserves, in Canada and in the United States. And the children would be taken from the families and put into what are known as residential schools. And the first superintendent of Indian Affairs, his name was Duncan Campbell Scott, he said, he's quoted as saying, in order to solve the Indian problem, we have to kill the Indian and save the child.
Stomp out any like Indianness or any of their culture or any of their heritage out of them so that they can fully assimilate. So they did that through many different types of ways of like, you know, straight torture, different torture exercises, if you want to call them that, or whatever, different torture devices, and also through like, you know, mental, sexual, and physical abuse. And just straight up, first thing that they did was cut your hair, no matter who you were. And if you spoke your language, you were beaten or like severely corporal punishment. And you know, any attempt at someone trying to express their culture was snuffed out pretty quickly.
I think it's like after, you know, at that point, like it's sort of 500 years of attempted genocide, we were still here, and we were still surviving through all these attempts at genocide. And what was keeping people together was community and family, and that sense of family that, you know, in Indian country, family means something different. You know, family is not just, you know, blood relation. It's the people around you. It's your community. It's the people who take care of you and who you take care of. So that idea, that sense of community and family kept us strong, kept us alive. So when it got to that point where it's like, oh, all this genocide isn't working. We can't kill them all. We can't get rid of them all. Well, let's attack that family structure and let's take away people's ability to be families and to have a community. So how do you do that? You take the children away and you put the children in a situation where they don't know their culture, where they don't know how to be a family anymore. And you hold them there until they're adults and then you release them back into the community.
Yeah, completely institutionalized.
Like all that stuff I was saying before about this being, you know, the final step or the final attempt at wiping out Aboriginal people, you know, that final stage of the genocide, it didn't work. We survived it. But surviving it isn't thriving. Surviving it is just making it through something. So what we're dealing with now is the fallout of that. So yeah, all those things that are put on the Aboriginal community as being our problems with our community, with alcohol abuse, with drug abuse, with all this stuff that stems from that attack on community, that attack on family, is now blamed on the victims. You know, so all those problems, and this is one of those things that I think you know, people in Canada, people in North America really have to realize is that these are outcomes. These aren't, this isn't how that our community can't handle these things or isn't able to function. It's that we've had our ability to function taken away. And what's really exciting right now is watching that, how that healing is happening and how people are becoming strong again. And that now, you know, the residential schools are finally over. So people, you know, none of us went to residential school, you know, so we don't have that direct experience now, so that healing can start. You know, when you're dealing with that kind of trauma in your life, you know, it's hard to come to a point of strength beyond that. So it becomes up to the generations after and the generations after now to pick up the pieces and put stuff back together and become a whole society again, become a whole community.
School life is a time full of numbers and words. We'll listen and not so to learn. With eyes that have future, for that's where we'll be. When time slips on past and it's our grit to earn.
When I was growing up, there was nobody practicing ceremonies. and nobody singing drum songs. The community was pretty much run by the church. The things that the church did, the Catholic Church, were things that involved all the Native people and the non-Native people. So they would have community gatherings, they would have bingos, they would have potlucks. I remember one time they had this procession in the bush where they had the signs of the cross there. I think that's what it was called. And so I remember my mom and I went, and I was only maybe about 8 years old, and I remember saying to my mom, well, what did the Indian people do a couple hundred years ago? And my mom used to always be so exasperated because they always asked her questions like that. And so I kind of made it my priority in life to find out. We had a wood stove, and there was always something on the stove, like maybe there was blueberry sauce. And when people came over, we'd make a fresh batch of dumplings. So we have blueberry dumplings, or we'd have a cake, or we have pie. But my mom always told me and my sister Debbie to make sure that we served the elders when they came in, make sure they had their tea and coffee and their pie or their cookies, whatever. And so this gave me the opportunity to ask them questions, but a lot of them didn't have answers to questions that I wanted to know about. And then when I was older, I was still searching, and then when I met Dan, we were both searching for the same thing because he was looking for it too. And so on our second date, we found out that we had both been in a sweat lodge, and so that really bonded us together. And so from that time on, from the first time we met, we've been walking together and sitting with elders and searching out elders and finding the answers to the questions that we've had, you know. And this has taken up a great part of our life, going to ceremonies and sitting with the elders and learning. And so that's been practically our whole life journey. And then now we've been sharing what we've been learning with the youth. And I don't see very many people our age trying to help the youth, but I remember the elders used to always say we have to worry about the next seven generations to come, and I hardly see anybody talking about that, you know, or trying to let the kids know that that's what we have to do. So we talk about it a lot, and we meet with students at university, but we also are going to elementary schools and talking to the youth there, the Native and non-Native as well, you know. And so I think we are making a difference in people's lives. But if it hadn't been for the turn, like the things that happened in my life, then I probably would have had a different life, different way of life.
If I could put my finger on it, I really would like it if there was more education towards understanding the culture and the language and people being able to kind of embrace that without any sense of stigmatism or feeling that it's not worthy or that, you know, maybe that's the past. It's no longer worthwhile looking into. Instead of embracing it as something that is maybe even avant-garde and something useful to carry in one's life. In terms of, for example, cultural funding, I find that disappointing that we haven't really produced enough cultural funding to support the initiatives that we could have out for Indigenous people right now. The other thing is that we get a lot of funding, for example, for multiculturalism, and we have a lot of support for various languages and being able to provide classes for those people, as long as you have enough students to want to learn those languages. But when it comes to Indigenous languages, we just don't seem to have that funding out that would be available for these people to learn the languages that they could use, and particularly have lost. My family's still looking into whether we do have Indigenous heritage. As far as we're concerned, we're a part of the community, and it's always great to have our extended family and people who have just welcomed us with open arms to be a part of their community. So as far as we're concerned, you know, we're already a family with those people, and it's just good to be a part of that.
Grandmother only spoke Ojibwe. She never learned English. And then in between, so my great grandmother never learned English. My grandmother knew English, but mostly spoke Ojibwe. And then her first two kids out of eight spoke Ojibwe. They taught Ojibwe to like my uncles. But the Catholic school told my grandparents not to teach anybody else English or Ojibwe, because it's really bad and they're getting in trouble in school and all that. So I don't know my language. And I knew my great-grandmother, who never learned English, right? So, like, I met her. I used to go to her house and stuff. So it's that close, like, losing the connection to our language.
Jesus ni beki Thank you.
I think it's run so deep that some people don't even know they're affected by residential schools. I mean, whatever Mi'kmaq traditions my family should have, they didn't get passed down, and I don't know why. And so I assume it's because somewhere down the line, someone in our family was forced into a residential school, and those traditions were lost. I am lucky enough to know that it's in my blood, even though I didn't find out until I was, a little older. But, you know, some people go almost their whole life without knowing. There's probably people who have died without knowing. That's generations of families who will never, ever know that it was in their blood. My family isn't ashamed to be Aboriginal, but I don't consider them to be proud either. And the reason is because they don't know anything about it. They don't get it. They don't know what they've lost. How are you supposed to be proud or even ashamed of something if you don't know what it is? You can't. You can't pass along something if you just don't know what it is, and you don't know how to feel about it, and you don't know how to interpret it. And on the other side of it, you know, there's people ready there to question you about it, and you don't have the answers. That's what's scary, and that's what often I feel holds me back from even exploring my heritage, is that there's always someone there to make you prove yourself, and I don't want to feel like that, and I don't want other people to feel like that.
So that concludes this week's edition of Gray Matters. We'll be back next week with another hour-long presentation from the NCLA. Coming up on CKUT's Drama Text, an hour of spoken word recordings. Till next week.
The Association des Services de Réhabilitation Sociale du Québec is filing a class action suit. If you were strip-searched between July 13th, 2006 and July 1st, 2011, if you were in one of the following facilities, Bordeaux, Rivière-des-Prairies, Roberval, Saint-Jérôme, or the male sector of Quebec City, you may be able to be part of this claim. For complete details, go to asrsq.ca/class-action. That's asrsq.ca/class-action. Claims must be filed before January 16th, 2022.
Depuis toujours, les infirmières prennent soin des patients avec cœur et dévouement. Aujourd'hui, c'est à notre tour de prendre soin de ces professionnels en valorisant leurs compétences et en assurant rapidement un meilleur équilibre entre travail et vie familiale. C'est également l'occasion pour les personnes qui ont quitté le réseau public de revenir prêter main forte avec de meilleures conditions. Plus que jamais, nous avons besoin d'elle pour améliorer la vie des patients. Pour en connaître davantage sur notre plan d'action, rendez-vous à québec.ca/infirmière. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-covid-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
McGill University's 4th annual Queer History Month is taking place this October. Join in later in the month for more exciting programming, including a chat with an elder session from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, October 19th, a zine-making workshop on Thursday, October 21st from noon to 2 p.m., a trans and non-binary in academia panel discussion on Wednesday, October 27th from 6 to 8 p.m., and finally a queer open mic night with performances by Opera Queens on Thursday, October 28th, also from 6 to 8 p.m. Queer History Month will be opened and closed by Elder Gawenodas Sedalio Fazio. Visit the Equity at McGill webpages, www.mcgill.ca/equity, for a complete list of Queer History Month events organized by McGill's Office of the Provost and Vice Principal Academic and their partners. The goal of McGill's Queer History Month is to raise awareness, advance education, and increase visibility of 2S LGBTQIA communities by recognizing their histories and contributions, building bridges, and bringing together McGill students, staff, faculty, and alumni, and Montreal community members.
What's the matter? Is everything all right? That's okay. I've got just the right thing for you. KUT 90.3.
Good evening and welcome to the October 21st edition of Drama Text. We're going to start off the show with Michel Lalonde's iconic work,